Hi, everyone. My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic. Hi there. I want to thank Billy for asking me to come out and speak tonight. And I also want to thank my husband, Mark, who drove me here. And it was so nice because I was in the back seat with my seven-year-old just reading to him for an hour and 30 minutes. And my husband, he's like, we're here now. And I just shut the book and got out of the car and had a mean game of a tag with my son. And it was just so nice to be able to do that. And I do have a home group, and that's in Richmond. It's called the Buford Group. We meet Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock. And I do have a sponsor, and I sponsor people as well. And so I'm going to share a little bit about my experience. And my son is in the back, and he's going to watch a video and read while I speak. And he gets very excited to go to AA meetings, and he is actually, what my sponsor calls him, we call him a little Ellicott. And because he's been in AA, I actually got sober when he was a baby, and he would love to go to meetings with me. At the time when he was in, he was under 1 year old, and I would just take him with his little car seat and the bassinet to the meetings, and he had no idea, but never really bothered. And then when he got older, when he was two, he used a voice saying that, you know, he's going to go, he can't wait to go to the AA meetings because there are people there to talk to him and give him attention. And he just really likes it. And last Thursday, I was asked to speak in Buckingham, and he went with my husband to a meeting in Richmond, and he said, I really want to go with you because I like the people there in Buckingham, and I want to go ahead and see them. It's been a while, so he's very selective, too, of the meetings he goes to. And it's amazing how that works. And, he knows about the Serenity Prayer, and he's actually one of my greatest teachers. And I wanted to get into AA when I knew that I was pregnant. I thought, I don't know how I'm going to take care of this little boy. And I had that obsession and the compulsion to drink and didn't know how to stop that. So when I initially came into AA, it was sort of for the wrong intention. I just wanted to be a good mother, and I wanted to stay sober, and I wanted that I really wanted the obsession to stop. And so I came in with that reason. And here, after being in AA for a few 24 hours, I have a wonderful husband. I'm a homeowner. I've had the same job for the past 6 years, and really enjoy my job. And I didn't have those things when I was drinking because I would go from, I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I just thought a geographical cure would fix me, and I'll go to Morgantown, West Virginia. And I thought, well, I don't like West Virginia, so I'll go to Naples, Florida. And I came to Richmond. I just had all these little, just thinking that if I move, it's going to go ahead and make me feel good on the inside. Because I always felt uneasy. Before I picked up that drink, I always was very insecure, uncomfortable in my own skin, couldn't look at people in the eyes. And it's funny because people who know me today find it hard to believe because I talk a lot. But when I was little, I would always have my sister speak for me. And I was always labeled, learning disability, and didn't do well in school. And I had a sister who would just sort of fight for me and be my voice and would always be that buffer. And I just felt insecure and uncomfortable. And I remember the first time when I had that drink, it took away that edge. It took away that feeling of uneasiness. It took away that insecurity. And I just felt this relief. And I would still be drinking if I didn't have those consequences. And I just remember early on, my father, his side of the family, his family is from Ireland, and he's 100% Irish, and there's lots of good drinkers in his family. My mom's 100% Italian, and there's lots of good food addicts who love to eat. And unfortunately, I've developed both. So whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, but thank God there's a solution to that. And I'm really grateful for the way I was raised. My mom, brought us up with good values and having to be able to date at 16 years old. We had to go to Catholic school and had to, just follow all these rules in the family. And I just always remember, just trying to be able to be the best girl. You're trying to be able to be good and trying to do everything perfect. and just always feeling, you know, just really uncomfortable and insecure, but the whole world would think that, you know, that I was nice or, you know, was respectful, but inside I just always felt like I was different from you. And when I came into AA, I, you know, thought that I don't think this is going to work for me because, you know, I'm in college, I'm a college girl, and you are men. I'm from, you know, from the north, you're from the south, and yeah, I'd find all these ways to compare, even with politics, and just try to talk myself out of feeling, you know, trying to be able to be different. Because the bottom line is I didn't want to do what you did. I didn't want to be teachable. I didn't want to follow directions. And I wasn't really willing to surrender. And so I would go ahead and make up all sorts of excuses. And the first time I had a drink was when I was in college. And I went to undergraduate college. And I was remembering that I had a bet with someone because this person asked if I drank, and I said, no, I don't do that. And my mom always raised us that, you know, your brothers could drink, but girl, you know, young women shouldn't drink, and you shouldn't do that. And when I went to college, this bet was, by the end of the semester, you'll be drinking. And I just thought, no, I'm just very into, you know, school and wanting to be able to get good grades and to be able to move on. And it was a big deal for me to be in college because my family, they didn't go to college, and I felt like it was a gift to be there, and I didn't want to mess it up. And I really had good intentions. And I remember when I was a college cheerleader, and I remember being asked to go to a party, and hearing that party there was drink, and I went ahead and, you know, decided to take my first drink, and that's when I had that feeling of that relief, and it's just like, oh, I don't have to worry about feeling insecure, I don't have to worry about pleasing, I don't have to worry about the approval, but what I remember is that my husband, like, he's an Alcoholics Anonymous, and Alcoholics Anonymous as well. I just outed you, honey, in case you didn't know. And, you know, he talks about how he likes, you know, he would drink beer and like to do, like, a lot of drinking with bars and socializing. And for me, I just remember when I had that drink the first time, I just thought, I don't want to be with people. I don't want to socialize. I don't want the beer. And I remember it was being able that they were drinking Lipton iced tea. And I just remember, and then one person was like, well, we shouldn't give her the Mad Dog because she's just so, and I was like, yo, I like that. And that's what I wanted. And I didn't think there was anything wrong with my drinking, but early on people would make comments about, well, you know, she's so nice, but she really puts it down. You know, she could be able to drink a lot. And it was funny because this one fraternity house that I would drink at, I was not invited to be there anymore because we would drink all their alcohol. And I think I wasn't doing what the boys wanted me to do, so they just sort of excluded myself and this other friend that I had from their house. And I just remember feeling like, you know, just a little bit ashamed and embarrassed. And I thought, I couldn't have been that bad. And, you know, how bad? And I just remember, you know, like, you can't be using up our alcohol. And when I remember when I would go to classes, people would call me wino. And I just thought, you know, what's the best thing to do? Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and leave college. And I'm going to go to a different school because I don't want these people, you know, looking down at me. I don't want them knowing my business. And I'll just start over. And so I went ahead and went to a different, transferred to a different college. And at this time, I just remember just, you know, feeling that obsession, you know, not feeling, but having that obsession where, you know, I wanted to drink. And when there were problems, it's like, just give me, I remember how that, you know, the drink would feel, would take away all of the, you know, all that unease. And I just wanted to be able to numb out and to medicate myself. And I just remember having that, and the big book talks about that physical craving, you know, that allergy. When we put that alcohol in us, we want more, and then the mind starts getting obsessed, and that's what was going on with my body and in my mind. And I just, you know, just wanted to be able to drink. And I grew up, and my mother was in a 12-step fellowship called Overeaters Anonymous. And instead of looking at my drinking, I thought, well, I've had a problem with bulimia and with my eating disorder, and I thought, yeah, I'll go ahead and join Overeaters Anonymous. And in OA, Overeaters Anonymous, they have the 12 steps, just like how they do in AA. And I worked the steps and actually had a sponsor. And when we went to the inventory, my sponsor's husband and her son, they were in AA. And she said, you don't belong in this fellowship. And she told me, she said, you know, you're an alcoholic. And I was very honest in the inventory and was trying to do what, you know, what I was asked to do. And she said, you know, you don't belong here. Why don't you go to some AA meetings? And I automatically thought, you know, she's so jealous of me. I'm losing all this weight and she wants me to sponsor, you know, I'm sponsoring people. And I think she's very threatened by me because I'm like this dismissed. And when I would go to OA, I love, like, to talk all about myself. And I just felt so, like, very, like, comfortable in the OA and just felt like I wasn't ashamed or embarrassed. It was very different from when I walked into AA. That feeling was very different. But I just thought, you know, she's just, it's her problem, not mine. And I just continued to have consequences. And what happened was when I, just to speed things up, when I went to graduate school, I remember in Morgantown, West Virginia, WVU, there's bars in every corner, and there's a lot of drinking. And now, I told you before that I didn't want to drink at the bars. I wanted to drink by myself. I was embarrassed. But now I would just sort of drink wherever I wanted to. And I remember, you know, going to parties and just, filling up the rum and just, you know, putting very little Coke and people saying, you know, that's just not normal. And I didn't care at this point. Before, you know, when I was an undergraduate, I did care what people think about the drinking and wanted to just conceal it. But now I'm like, who cares? I just want what I want. I want that drink. And I like the way it would make me feel and the way it medicated me. And I got really scared because I was paying my way through school. And I was, again, you know, wanting to be able to get, and I was just scared and didn't know what to do. And I thought, if that sponsor telling me I need to go to AA, and I thought, yeah, I'll go to AA. But it took me a while to go to AA, because, and I called the AA fellowship, and they said in Morgantown, we'll come get you. And I wasn't used to anyone helping me, and I was always raised where, you know, in our family, what stays here, you know, what's said here stays here, and you don't tell your business to people. And if someone wants to come help you on the outside, you don't accept that help. So I remember saying to the person who answered the phone in AA, you know, I'll get there myself. And so, and it took me a while to get there because there's bars in every corner. And eventually, you know, I did get there. And that feeling was so different when I went into that AA meeting because people were talking about, you know, being powerless over alcohol. And they were talking about sponsorship. And I just remember just sitting there and I was just so sad because I was like, this is where I belong. When people were telling the stories, no matter what the sex was, how old they were, man, woman, education, everybody was like saying something that I could identify with. I was like, wow, you know, I drink that way too, or I think that. And I just, you know, identified so much. And I just remember going to the bathroom and just crying. I was like, when they're giving out those little coins for, does anyone want a 24-hour chip? But I was just crying because I was like, I don't want to be them. I don't want to, you know, to be like those people. And I just remember just crying. And I just left. And, you know, it took me a couple months to be able to come back. And, again, it was just those consequences. And the drinking was really starting to scare me. And eventually what I did was I went back to the AA, and people would say go to meetings. And so I went to meetings Monday through Friday and at noon. And on the weekends I worked full time. And what I loved about it was, like, the more meetings I went to, the more the obsession stopped. And I was just, like, white-knuckling it where, you know, I was trying so hard not to drink, and I'm a binge drinker, and I was trying so hard, you know, not to do it. And when I went to those meetings, it's like I didn't have to try, just that somehow that obsession stopped. And I really liked going to the meetings. But at this time, I don't want to do everything that's suggested. When they say, you know, get a sponsor, I thought, I'm not going to get a sponsor. I don't want someone knowing my business. I don't want someone in my face. I don't know if I could trust these people. I'd rather pay a therapist $120 an hour than to trust someone else and to be vulnerable with them. And I just remember, like, they had this 12 steps written on the wall, and I would sit there at the meeting during the hour, and they were like, you know, when we admit we're powerless over food, I'm like, okay, powerless over alcohol, I could do that. It was easy for me to admit I'm powerless over food, so I can do this. I can do the third step. So I sort of work the steps from the wall, and my sponsor says when you work the steps from the wall, you get an off-the-wall program. But I was doing the best I could, and I liked it because the obsession was gone. I wasn't in any kind of relationships. I didn't want to be in the relationships that were too scary. I was just sort of getting by, and that was good for me because all I wanted was that obsession to stop. And then right after graduate school, I decided that I was going to take a job in Florida. And, of course, you know, we always, wherever we go, especially when you're untreated, here I was thinking that, you know, I'm a recovering alcoholic and I've got a good program because I was going to 5 meetings a week, even though I've never worked the steps, didn't have a sponsor, didn't have a home group, didn't have service, didn't really have a God that was everything to me. And I decided to get a job in a treatment center working as an alcohol counselor. And I thought, this is going to be great. And of course, as soon as I moved to Florida, when I went to an AA meeting, and remember, I'm going to 5 AA meetings when I'm in West Virginia, and now all of a sudden I'm thinking, I'm too busy. I've got the case of the busies. I'm this professional. I'm, you know, just graduated from school, and I'm too busy to go to AA. And I don't think I'm as bad as I really thought I was. I think I was being a little dramatic. I'm too young to be an alcoholic. When I would hear people's stories, and I thought, and also I worked with people who were addiction counselors, and they would just say that they get their 12-step work by helping other people. So I thought, I'm working with them 8 hours a day, and I don't have to go to meetings. I'm working. And what happened was one night there was the treatment center. They took people to AA, and I decided when the people that I worked with at the treatment center came to the AA meeting, I thought, I can't go to AA anymore. Because even though there's lots of other AA meetings I could have gone to, I was looking for excuses not to go to AA. And I thought, you know, I can't go back to AA because professionally there's a conflict of interest. So I stopped going. And I was just, you know, just miserable. And I'm not drinking, but I'm miserable. I can't do relationships. My job, what they do is I kept getting one promotion after another. I thought it was because I was so great, but they kept wanting me. Like, I started from one unit, then they made me a lead therapist at another unit. Then they made me a director of the inpatient away. So it's like, they just kept putting me away, yeah, just because I couldn't deal with the relationships. And people would just say, you know, you're very bossy. You know, it's obviously you hate men. You're a male hater, and you're this feminist, and all sorts of things. And I just thought, you know, again, you're jealous of me. And I just thought, you know, I'm too good for this treatment center. I think I need to do some research, and, you know, I have these high hopes of getting into a Division I school, and I'll move. And so I decided I'll come to Virginia and work under someone who's trained to do research in the field of behavioral research. I thought, I'm going to go ahead and publish, and I'm going to be, you know, successful, and I'm too good to be working with alcoholics. So what happened was I had conversations, and my mentor, who I just love dearly, and we actually had dinner with him the other night, we just have very different views when it comes to alcohol. He believes that alcohol is just alcoholism is a behavioral kind of approach, and it could be fixed, you know, through if you have the right kind of behavioral strategies, if you have the right kind of interventions. And we would have these talks in the car, and I would just love the talks because it was like, if you're an alcoholic, if you just don't want to drink, what you have to do is do something good for yourself. You have to replace that behavior with something that's going to be more healthy. And I love this knowledge. You know, I love this reliance on human power. And I thought, well, I think I can go ahead and drink because I don't think I was, you know, real alcoholic. And I think, you know, listening to this person who's number five, you know, behavior, top five behaviors in the world, I'll just do what he's telling me to do. And what happened was eventually here I was a dry drunk, but now I did pick up, and not only with the alcohol, but in the food as well, with my bulimia. And I just thought, you know, I could never go back to, I can't go back to the AA, or I can't go back to OA. I've tried everything. What the heck am I going to do? And I just remember working with people who were in the treatment center, and I thought, yeah, those little spoiled brats can pay $30,000 to get a treatment. I think I need to go to the treatment center. You know, I think I need to be, you know, I think I need a good therapist, and I think I need to, just sort of be gentle on myself, and I also thought before that, I thought, you know, why am I drinking? And again, you know, I'm going to fix my own problem here. My ideas are just pretty scary. Thank God today for sponsorship, and thank God that I don't have to, you know, trust my ideas, because my ideas can be very toxic. But I thought, my plan was that, I've never been in a long-term relationship. I think I need to get married, too. I thought, you know, I've been isolating myself, and if I just open myself up, I will go ahead and have a loving relationship. And so I picked out someone in the personals, and I asked him to marry me. And I went ahead and even told him what ring to buy. I told him what, you know, just, you know, it was me calling the shots and me directing and me managing. And no wonder why people didn't like me and how hard I was to get along with. And and then when I got married, of course, that didn't work, and that's when I came up with the treatment center. I'm going to go to the treatment center. And, of course, I had to have, you know, someone who's into self-help and very world-renowned and writes a lot of self-help books in the therapy sections. She had to be my sponsor because I was too good to have, a normal sponsor. And I went to the treatment center for 6 weeks. And they told me that, you know, I need to go to AA. They told me I need to go to OA. They told me I was sexually anorectic and I need to go to Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. They told me I need to go to ACOA because I have the family of origin issues. They had me doing lots of work with, you know, teddy bears and inner child work and loving myself. And I just remember going to each fellowship just feeling so confused. And I had no idea. I was just a big mess. And especially think about it, if you're a real alcoholic of the hopeless variety, to sit around all day talking about yourself and your issues is not where we want to be, because it puts us so into self and it puts us so inward. And that's where I was. And I just remember then they had the family week, and my ex-husband at the time came in for the family week, and the best thing about the family week was I found out that I was pregnant, and from the family week, and then I thought, what am I going to do here? And that's when I decided to call a friend of mine in the treatment center who had really good, I remember she didn't get into a lot of drama, didn't get into the gossip. She was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she understood about the food piece as well that I suffered from. And she said, I said, what am I going to do? I've tried this, I've tried that, I've been certified to teach yoga, I have been to 6 weeks in the treatment center, I've gone to the 12-step fellowships, I've had the top therapist in the world working on me with my issues, and nothing is working. And she said, you're just going to come to my house for the weekend, and we're going to go ahead and take it from there. And when I went to her, I'm thinking, what is she going to do with me? Because I know so much. I have all this knowledge that I've learned in school, and I've got, you know, what's she going to tell me that I don't know? And how is this going to work? And I only did that because of my son, where I thought, because I would have just been far gone. I thought, you know, I want to be a good mother. I want him to be able to, I want to give him a childhood that's going to be healthy. And I'm not the parent. You know, I never grew up with aspirations of playing with dolls, and I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I went to her house, and all she told me was that she's like, we're going to go to an AA meeting. And I was like, you know, what about the SLAW meetings and the ACOA and the OA? She's like, no. She said, we're just going to go to AA, and she's like, and then we're going to get rid of sugar, flour, and wheat. And she said, I want you to go on this meal plan, but I really want you to go to AA. And so I was with her for the weekend, and we just went to AA all the time. And I thought, yeah, I had to get on an airplane to do this. And she said, you know, when you go back, I want you to continue with the AA meetings. And I had no idea, sort of being new in the Richmond area. There was a clubhouse on the Lothian Turnpike that I went to because it was the first one I was able to find. And I just went to that meeting, and I just, you know, just kept going. And I remember my brother-in-law, who was active in AA at the time, he said to my sister, because I'm really worried about her. He's like, that group isn't really strong, and she doesn't have a sponsor. And he would talk, he's like, I don't know what's going to happen. What's going to happen? And here, when I was in this clubhouse, there was a flyer for an event that was going to be in Buckingham. And it was my husband's name on that flyer that I had no idea who he was. And it said Mark with his phone number. And the only reason why I was attracted to that number because it was a 434 area code. And I thought, I'm going to be moving here. I'm going to be moving. My job is going to take me in this area in Farmville. And I'm going to call him. And I just remember calling Mark. And I said to him, I need some phone numbers of some women. And he gave me a woman's phone number, and he told me about his home group, and little did I know that I was going to marry him. I mean, you just never know what's going to happen in AA. You're just full of surprises when you join AA. And so here I was, Farmville, as a single mother, and I thought, you know, how am I going to get to Buckingham? Because I'm from up north. Remember, I live in Pittsburgh, and I'm not used to rural areas. I'm not used to the dirt roads, and I think that's why Mark had to drive me here tonight. I just don't. And I just remember it took me a while to find those meetings in Buckingham. But again, I was like, you know, I just have to be able to go to these meetings. The son needs a mother, and I've got to find the meetings. And eventually I did get to the Buckingham, and I remember calling this woman, and she's like, I'll come get you. And I was like, no, you don't have to come get me. And she's like, you know, if you're not, yeah, we'll come, we'll help you, we want to be there. And I'm not used to accepting help. I'm not used to, you know, being able to, you know, to ask. I'm just not used to that. I feel like I'm a taker or a mooch, or I feel like I'm putting you out. And all these messages go on in my head. And when I went to that meeting, here it was, like, there was a man reading the big book to people. And I thought, he's so controlling. He's such a dictator. Why isn't a woman representing the group? But again, I had nowhere else to go. And I couldn't argue and I couldn't debate. And I was desperate. I was really desperate because I was and I was also very willing to do whatever I was asked to do because I was taking care of this child and wanted to be the best mother that I know how to be. And I just remember following the suggestions. And I would go back to, you know, where I lived, and I would follow little suggestions like, your problem is self-centeredness. And I was like, yeah, that's so true. And I would hear things I've never heard about, like structure, like, you know, be able to find a home group, don't go 2 days without a meeting, get active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, this is so easy. It's, you know, better than doing inner child work. I don't know how to journal out to my inner child. I don't know how to, you know, get, I'm thinking, but I can set up chairs at a meeting. I can go ahead and make the coffee. This is all doable. And so what happened was, and I went ahead and I got a sponsor this time, and I just followed the suggestions. I did whatever was asked to do. And it's so funny because I would worry about, like, who's going to take care of my son? And I was told, just bring him to the meeting. And there was child care that was provided. And my son, he just loved to go. And there was, like, people playing with him while I was at the meeting. And that was taken care of. And I would have never thought, you know, in my mind I'm thinking, you know, how am I going to do this financially? And the thing is, it's just making that commitment to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. How when I put my recovery, when I put my alcohol and my alcoholism as a priority in my life, everything else gets taken care of, whether it be childcare, jobs, relationship, finances, health. And I was just baffled by that because I always thought, I've got to work hard. I've got to make this happen. If I just set up the right treatment plan, if I set up some goals and objectives, you know, it'll, and I would kill myself. I would just wrap my head around things and just feel completely frustrated and just a big mess. And what happened was I went ahead and it was about a year. It was so funny because I hated my husband when I first met him, and I ended up marrying him. And the person who was leading the meeting, I hated him, and he's my sponsor today. So it's sort of a love-hate relationship. You just never know. Again, you never know. If someone would have said, you know, 6 years ago, this person would be your husband or this person, you know, I would have said, no, you're joking. And you just never know. And what happened was, we decided, as my son was getting older, we decided that we would go ahead and move to Richmond to give him more of a diverse education and to let him start kindergarten. And so we moved. And I was just real clear that I should have a sponsor that was, and everything was working for me in my life when I was in Farmville, because I was following the suggestions. I was teachable, and I was, you know, I had the principles before personalities, had a service job, was working the steps through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I thought I needed to have another sponsor. See, because I'm one of those people where I can't stay still, and I just get shocked when I see Billy Hill, like, with the same sponsor for all those years. When I come back to Buckingham and see the same people there, I'm like, how can they do that? I get bored easily. I just think that, okay, we've gone through this phase, and we're going to move on. And this is a nice thing while it lasted, but we need to change the program up a little. We need to add a little bit of this or add a little bit of that, instead of just doing what works. And see, the alcoholic that I am, I want to complicate things. And I think, well, I'll have a better life if I do this. And I thought, if I have a sponsor that's in Richmond, that way she can keep her eye on me. And I think I need to switch sponsors. And so I switched sponsors. I switched home groups. And I learned, Richmond is very different from Buckingham, because in Buckingham there's only one AA and everybody does AA the same way. But in Richmond, there's a lot of different AA groups and a lot of different types of AA. And of course, what do I like to do? I like to find the AA that does a little work. You know, I want to be able to find the people who say, you know, I go to one or two meetings a week, or, you know, I have a sponsor that I really don't really use. I just sort of keep her at a distance. Or we go ahead and we're going to focus on. So that's what my mind attracts to. And for better or worse, I went through this phase where I thought, well, I think I joined Alcoholics Anonymous to make my husband happy. I think I was just a little bit, being in that country, I was a little bit, you know, like sort of like a cult. They were feeding me things. And I don't think I'm, you know, I don't think I'm a real alcoholic. And I think I was a little dramatic because this is how my mind works. And because, you know, the bottom line is I don't want to be teachable. I don't want to follow directions. And I want to live on self-will, run riot. And I don't want I don't want to have people to hold myself accountable to. That's what my alcoholism says, and that's what it does. And so anytime, like, I went through something, I would always call, Al from Buckingham. Like, I would do, like, a 5.5-hour inventory with someone, and I would just cry. I'm like, I'm in a fetal position. I'm so depressed. I think I need medication. You know, I went through all sorts of things. But thank God, by being active in Alcoholics Anonymous, finding a few people that you can be able to tell all to. And then one day what happened was I called my old sponsor, and our boundaries were, she became a friend, and she's like, you know, she couldn't sponsor me because, you know, just I wouldn't want to listen to her because we have too much of a friendship. And I said to her, what do you think about having your husband sponsor me? And she said, yeah, I think that's the best idea I've heard. And I remember calling my husband from work, and I'm like, what do you think about Al working with me? And he's like, I think that's a great idea. So I sort of sandwiched it in where, and I remember Allison called. She goes, I know you didn't talk to Al, but I've already talked to him, and he's really looking forward to it. And it was like this, you know, like, and my husband is kind enough where he's not going to, you know, get in there and try to, you know, say, you know, your AA life is really, you have no AA life, and you're just sort of going through it. So he's healthy enough to stay out. Thank God for that. And I think if he would have been in my face, it would have made me leave. You know, I wouldn't have wanted to partake in that. And eventually when I met Al, I just, you know, having that AA, I thought, I'm not really excited about, I don't like coming to meetings. I don't like your conferences. I feel like it's a little bit controlling. I don't feel like, I feel like it's a lot of micromanaging here. I don't feel like there's a lot of depth. And, but again, you know, if you're going to be my sponsor, I'm teachable, I'm willing, I'm open to follow your suggestions. And by the way, I think I'm bipolar. And he never, like, and he wouldn't laugh at me, and he wouldn't say, you know, you're crazy, or look what you did when you went to Richmond, and that's why your life is miserable. He just said, you know, you might be bipolar, and what I want you to do, and, you know, I'm not a doctor, you might be this way, but what I want you to do is I want you to go to 5 meetings a week. And that's what I started off with when I was in West Virginia. He said, then after 30 days, you and I will sit down and we'll see, you know, if you need medication or if you need, you know, medical advice, whatever. He said, but just go to lots of meetings. And when you go to lots of meetings, take an interest in people and try to show up a little early. And I used to like to wear my pajamas to meetings, and I'd wear my sweats. And he said, I can try to dress up a little bit and try to, you know, help out a little before the meeting and after. And I did what he suggested to do because, you know, I want to be happy, joyous, and free. I've gone through the steps, and when I'm living a life that's on a spiritual level, I feel good. It's, I want to feel good. It's not about helping other, wanting to serve. Yeah, it's all about me wanting to be filled up. So I'm like, I'll do that so I'll feel good. And I went ahead, and after 30 days, I was like, you know, you are right. I don't feel so up and down. I don't feel so goofy. Yeah, I feel like, you know, that this is working. He said, great, well, what I want you to do now is go to 4 meetings a week. And I thought, you know, I have a child, I have a husband, I work full-time. How am I going to pull this off? And he kept telling me, the more meetings that you go to, the more you're going to be able to feel productive. The more, he said, you know, someone with an intense personality like yours, you need to go to lots of meetings because that sitting there for that hour will calm you down. Sitting there for that hour is going to take you out of yourself. And, you know, the more intense we are, the more meetings we need to go to. And so I remember just being, you know, being able to follow the suggestion. I thought, I don't think this is going to work for me because he's all AA happy and I'm not all AA happy. You know, he's on. And so, and when I started doing that, I thought, I really like going to these AA meetings. And I have to tell you, like, you know, and I think it's important for those of you who don't have a sponsor or struggling. Yeah, for me, a good sponsor is someone who's enthusiastic about AA and someone who has really got a long, like, he's got a long road ahead, you know, just has got, you know, gone through that experience, has, you know, is really got the feet planted in AA. And I just remember just, you know, having that enthusiasm for AA and really liking it. And it was like for the first time where I thought, I'm not going because my husband's going, or I'm not going so I could be able to, you know, to be an AA couple. I'm going because I like going. And it just sort of, you know, took care of, so I don't think at 4 meetings a week. Last week I went to 6 meetings last week, and I didn't think anything of it. And again, I'm a better mother, I'm a better wife, I'm better at work. I'm just, you know, I get more done in terms of housework, and it's just amazing how that works. And then what happened is, as we went through the steps again, it was interesting. I was really into the technical, where I would, like, you know, get in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we have to follow the big book. And the more I follow it, the more spiritual I'm going to feel. And I, you know, it's just all about the technique. And what he told me was, he said, you know, it's not about the technique. And when you do your inventory, it's about a personal and honest inventory. And I thought, I've never had a personal inventory with someone. I used to write things out on the paper to be thorough, and I used to write things out because I wanted to be fixed. But I never wrote on that kind of level, thinking it's got to be personal. And it's like, give me the charts, give me the graphs, give me the give me the mechanics of it. And he just said, you know, I just want you to do the, it says here, you do the four columns, do it however you want to do it, and then we're going to meet and do it. And the last inventory I had, like I said, was for 5.5 hours. And my poor husband, when he came home, he had to hear me. I was like in a fetal position where I was like, I want to kill myself. I hate this. And so when I did the inventory a different time at a personal level, and it being honest, it took us 45 minutes to do it. And when I did that inventory for the first time ever in AA, I felt as if I was really a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was like, wow, I really feel like I'm a part of that group. And because before I used to think, well, I'm an alcoholic and I'm a food addict. I'm an alcoholic and I'm a mother. I'm an alcoholic, I'm a single mother. I'm That was, I want to be apart from you. I don't want to be in your little community because I want to find ways of being different. But it was the first time I did that inventory where I'm like, I'm no different. Man, woman, Republican, Democrat, Catholic, whatever. I thought, you know, Christian, Buddhist. I thought, it doesn't matter. I'm really, we're all in Alcoholics Anonymous because we're powerless and there's no other option. And it was such a good feeling, you know, just at that gut level where I was like, you know, I really am a member here. And it's just amazing because... And people, like, I was like, they're going to gossip because I have a man sponsor. And I don't promote it. I think that woman with woman and men with a woman and the men with men. And the thing is what happens for me, you know, I thought they're going to talk about me. They're going to gossip. Why am I having a, you know, my husband sponsor? But I have to tell you, God works in mysterious ways. As a result of this kind of sponsorship relationship, there's been so many women in my life that I sponsor. And I thought, I don't know how I'm going to do this. But it's just amazing how God works, because I have women in my life now who are asking me to work with them. And I thought, I don't know. I'm used to drama. I'm used to being the therapist. I'm used to psychoanalysis. I'm on the phone with them for 1.5 hours trying to get their approval. I want them to think I'm the best sponsor. So I'm going to give you all my time. And the way he's taught me how to sponsor people, he's like, you know, you ask them, how many meetings are they going to? What steps are they working? What kind of service job? And I thought, you know, woman to woman, we should talk about issues. Woman to woman, we should talk about your drama. We should talk about your trauma. And as your sponsor, I should, you know, take all that stuff on. And I just remember just feeling really drained before I had him as a sponsor, where I thought, I can't deal with people's problems. Yeah, I'm a therapist. I get paid to do this. I get paid, and why should I be listening to people? I don't like this. And it's amazing because, it's like now that these people, I need them more than they need me. Because I'm an alcoholic, I'm self-centered. I know all about the big book from after you go through it. Especially when you go to meetings like this, you start catching on the buzzwords. We know the right things to say to people to get them off our back. But when you're working with people, it's like you've got to just, you know, be able to talk from one alcoholic to the next. To be able to talk and to be able to, you know, encourage. And as a result of, you know, encouraging and trying to be able to, listen, I've been able to be much easier to live with, because I'm not thinking about my own plans. I'm not thinking about myself or my issues. And I don't think I'm helping that many people at all. And I'm thinking, it really doesn't matter if I leave or if I come. You know, and I did a workshop a few months ago in Pennsylvania where we took women through the big book. And it was amazing because the woman that I sponsor, they're sponsoring women. And they're like, let's get a picture of our sponsorship family. I was shocked. to see how many women they're working with and the woman that they're working with. And when I was in that picture, I was thinking, and oh my goodness, it's amazing how this works. And we need them as much as they need us. And it's a beautiful thing. So I'm just really grateful. And, you know, my AA life today is very simple. And it's like, you know, just try, instead of getting into the mechanics of the big book, it's like, how do we practice these principles? I used to think my sponsor was really goofy when he's like showed up to meetings on time. And it's a spiritual principle to be on time because you're courteous and you show people respect. I used to be one of those people that would come in with my Starbucks, and I would come in like 10 minutes late for the meeting because I had to get my drink. And I didn't want to stick around for your how it works. I don't want to stick around with your 12 steps. And nowadays, it's just so nice. Before the meeting, we were playing it tag. My son wanted to play tag, and it's like, you just never know when you show up for things on time, you being able to talk and being able to take an interest. Before, it used to be all about me. And on Thursday night when I went to meeting, I was really interested to talk to some of the people that I haven't talked to in a while, find out how they're doing. And, I never knew how to do that before because I was always so neurotic and insecure and thinking about me, and I didn't know how to be able to ask you how you're doing. And I learned that this is a program of giving, and I used to think this is a program of living because I want to live. You know, I want to go ahead and I want to live a spiritual life. And it's so funny. I was teasing my sponsor before when I did the inventory. I said, "Are we going to say a prayer before this inventory? Are we going to go ahead?" And he's like, "This is our prayer by doing the inventory. This is the prayer." And I thought, it's so true. And, you know, everything about these steps, there's usually a prayer beforehand or a prayer afterward. And everything about this program is spiritual. And for me, you know, having that emotional and the mental health, I want it to be emotional because when I feel depressed, I feel like my problem is going to be, you know, my problem is depression. When I feel sad, it's like my problem, I'm told in Alcoholics Anonymous, my problems are spiritual problems. And my solution to my depression, my solution to my relationship, my solution to my parenting is going to be spiritual. And I didn't know how to do that. I thought if I run to Barnes & Noble and read self-help books on parenting or read self-help books on how to have a better marriage, it's going to get better. But in AA, it tells me that solution's got to be spiritual. And when I'm loving and patient and tolerant and kind to my spouse, that's how our relationship grows. That's how it fosters. And it's like, I thought it was going to be emotional. We're going to have to be in intensive therapy to have a good marriage. And it's never been the case. And I'm just so grateful for that. And also, it's been quite a ride since I've been in AA. It really has. There are ups and there are downs. But one thing which keeps me here is being connected to people. And I used to be connected through books. I used to be connected through knowledge. It's like human knowledge. You want that knowledge, that self-knowledge. But when I'm connected by people, I have people today who really know me. And they know everything about me. And I can't hide out. And if I do hide out, I get called on that. And I never had that before. And I'm just so grateful. And there's just so many things that I have gotten from the program. It's amazing because with my son, his name is Will, and I never thought I was going to be a mother. It was never in my cards. Again, my own designs. And his name is Will because a friend of mine told me, she's like, maybe it's God's will for you to be a parent. Maybe it's God's will for you to be a mother. So I named him Will, and he's 7 years old. And it was amazing because when we moved to Richmond, there was a private school. They called me up on a Saturday, and they're like, what do we need to do to get your son to our school? Yeah, he scored very well. He's a nice boy. We want him to be there. And he's at a school where we pay very little tuition for him to be there. And not only is he bright, but he's like a nice little boy. And I never would have thought like that I knew how to do that as a mother. And AA has taught me how to parent. There's been a few times that I've gone off, but I could be able to count on two hands. I don't, and that's because AA has taught me how to pause when I'm agitated. AA has taught me how to be able to put his needs before mine, because before it used to be all about me. You know, me. And I'm so grateful. And as of this coming August, I've been married for 1 year, and I've been in a relationship for 5 years, and this is a shock, because the longest relationship that I ever had was only 6 months. I was not, part of my amends and my last inventory, I got married to the Catholic Church, and this woman told me, she said, this priest does not believe in annulments. this priest is hardcore. And I just explained to him as part of my amends about the first marriage, what happened, and he said, you need to get an annulment. He said, you know, this was not a marriage. There was no yoke here, and, you know, you need to be able to get this annulment and move on. And, you know, and that's part of making that restitution of the past, of the harm that I've caused. And, but we've been married, and it's been a wonderful opportunity because, like I said, I didn't know how to ask for help. I don't know how to be able to work in relationships. And, you know, and here I, you know, found a man who just really loves me. And I used to think that, you know, this is going to end. You know, once he finds out who I really am, he's going to dump me. He can't stand me. And when he finds out the real me, and it's been like 5 years and I'm like still waiting for that shoe to drop, and it hasn't. And actually Billy Hill was sort of cute where he was asking me about my marriage. I'm like, it just keeps getting better. And he's like, that honeymoon doesn't have to end. And I'll always remember that. He's like, it doesn't have to end. It keeps getting better and better. And it's like, when you just put your eyes on you being able to help others and being of service and stay out of the way instead of trying to fix or manage, it's like great things happen in relationships. And I'm just completely at all, because if I had my hand in this, we would be attending, you know, all those marriage workshops, and I would not be able to, you know, to be a normal, well, I can't say I'm normal now, but I wouldn't be able to be a stable wife and to be able to be there for him. And my father, I had a lot of anger towards him, and it's just amazing because his program has taught me how to forgive. And he celebrated his 70th birthday this year, and my mom asked, she's like, would you throw a party? You're the only one in our family, you know, you're reliable, can you please throw him this party? And the old me would have been like, no way, you know, look what he did to me, he harmed me, and he's not a good person, and blah, blah, blah. And I just, because AA teaches us to act better than how we feel, and I said, sure, I'll go ahead and I'll have the, you know, go ahead and do the party. And he loved it. And he's not a real, you know, I can't say that a relationship where he calls me and says, I love you. Yeah, he didn't grow up that way. But I have learned to be able to clear away all that stuff, all the stuff that I have with him in the past. And giving him this birthday party, he was really, you know, really grateful and very excited to be able to have his 70th birthday. And I just got so many things from this program. I used to go from job to job to job. I've been in the same job now for 6 years. And this year they had to evaluate me and see if they wanted me to stay, and they actually tenured me, and which means that they want me to stay at their job for a long time. And I thought, I never had that, you know, that they want me to stay. Usually in the past, it's like, let's find ways of trying to get her out by, you know, calling them promotion when we really don't want to deal with her. And I'm just really, really grateful, grateful for that. And it's amazing because in this program, I thought, was raised in the church, and I, you know, want my son to go to church. And I just thought church is separate from AA, and in AA I can't talk about God, and, you know, it was like these, you know, compartmentalized. And now, in my AA life today, God is everywhere. I can go to church, and it's the same thing. I can go to AA, God is God, and it doesn't really matter where I'm at. And I've never had, so those walls have come down, and I'm just so, so grateful for that. And before I felt like I had to be, you know, compartmentalized and be a certain way here at this group and another, and what you see is what you get, and I'm just really, really, just shocked at that. And my prayer life today, I used to think that if I go to become a yoga instructor, if I live in an ashram for 30 days, I'm going to get spiritual. And all the praying that I used to do before I'd gone through the steps were all very self-centered prayers to make me feel good, to make me feel okay, to make me feel emotionally balanced. And I try to pray today. My prayers are simple, and I always try to pray with "Thy will be, Thy will not mine be done." And I try to pray if this can be helpful to someone else, if I can be helpful to other people. And that's just real different because in some days when I don't feel like spiritual and when I don't feel good, I still pray anyway. And because before I used to think, well, if I'm having a bad, I'm just gonna have a bad day. You know, forget that prayer life, forget about all that. And it's like, you know, it's not, you know, prayer is it's an action, and it's not a feeling. And I'm like, wow, I never knew that. I thought it was always about, you know, a feeling or trying to achieve. It's like being able to pray is just action, just like going to a meeting. And I do it no matter how I feel. And so it's 10 to 7, and I've really said a lot, but I want to go ahead and just thank you for allowing me to share at your meeting. And I will go ahead and pass, or not pass, but end. Thank you.